Hello, this is Ms. Dell with the Decatur Herald in Review, dated Monday, May 4th, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Big Rains Slow Spring Planting. Weather, soil conditions keep many tractors on sidelines. Despite statewide planting progress being ahead of the average pace, weather and soil conditions kept many tractors on the sidelines in large portions of central and northern Illinois through mid-April. However, many finally got a chance to begin or resume field work late last week. Things are going pretty well. We're just working the kinks out, Michael Deppert, president of the Tazewell County Farm Bureau, told Farm Week. Deppert received nearly 5 inches of rain on his farm in the first week of April, but managed to avoid heavy downpours from more recent storms. He and his father planted about 2/3 of their soybeans and got started with corn as of last week. We kind of lucked out, he said. Once things kind of dried out, we were able to get rolling and kind of missed some of the other big rains. Lance Taraccioni, technical agronomist for DeKalb and Asgro, covers 9 counties in west central Illinois and said progress in that area varies depending on who took advantage of the first planting window in late March. If you've been very patient, you likely haven't started yet, Traccioni told Farm Week. If you've been very aggressive, you might be 1/2 to 3/4 done. The norm would be people that are somewhere in between and have some planting done, but probably not as much as they would like. Severe storms, frequent rains, and cooler temperatures this month have kept soil conditions from reaching a favorable level to plant in many northern locations, Traccioni said. By the calendar, the area isn't delayed yet, but quick progress downstate makes farmers in the north feel behind in field work. We're probably going to be very soon have people planting in conditions that are actually worse than conditions they passed up 2 or 3 weeks ago because they thought maybe it was a little too early or they didn't like the weather forecast, he said. Their patience is waning, and they're going to be pushing things a little more aggressively. Traccioni encourages growers to wait for conditions to be fit, even if it means pushing planting well into May. We can raise really good corn in central Illinois, planted the 20th of May, he said. I'll take May 20 planted in good conditions over April 20 planted a little on the wet side 10 times out of 10. Crops were planted in March, emerged fairly well, Traccioni said, but cooler temperatures have affected stands in some areas, including a field he planted March 30th in Monmouth that was hit by a freeze event April 20th. The corn that was up is pretty well froze off in the low areas, he said. Frost is never uniform across the field, so you can find plants that were froze off at the ground that look like they're dead, and the plant next to it might be barely touched. He also shared reports about crusting of early planted soybeans because of hard rains following planting. USDA reported 20% of soybeans were planted statewide as of April 19th, compared to the 5-year average of 7%. Corn planting reached 13% by the same date, up from 4% the week prior and 5 percentage points ahead of average. Meanwhile, 3% of the corn crop has emerged, compared to 1% at the same time last year. Our next front page article, officials revamp funding formula. Board eyes shift in counting of low-income students expects Fed law to shrink SNAP rolls. The Illinois State Board of Education is asking lawmakers this year for $200,000 to develop a new way of counting low-income students. Although that's only a small fraction of the overall $10.9 billion general revenue fund budget, the agency is seeking to fund pre-K through 12 public schools next year. The request points to a larger issue that public schools could be facing over the next several years, as the number of students officially counted as low income is expected to drop. That's because Illinois currently counts low-income students based on their enrollment in federal support programs, including Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, temporary assistance for needy families, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. However, under new eligibility rules that were part of the federal budget law Congress passed last year, known as H.R. 1 or the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the number of people enrolled in those programs is expected to decline. Those include changes to SNAP eligibility that went into effect May 1st, disqualifying many groups of non-citizens and imposing new work requirements on many able-bodied adults. Although the rules mainly affect adults and therefore aren't expected to have an immediate impact on students, officials have said they believe these rules could eventually cause entire households to become unenrolled in federal aid programs, resulting in fewer children being enrolled as well in future years. "We believe we have time to come up with an alternative method," Robin Steens, executive director of the education research and advocacy group Advance Illinois, said in an interview. The changes in federal eligibility rules for Medicaid, SNAP, and other federal programs could have a direct impact on the amount of state funding many districts receive through the evidence-based funding formula. That's the formula that lawmakers adopted in 2017 that calls for a $300 million in additional funding for public schools each year, with the bulk of that money earmarked for at least adequately funded districts. The formula uses several factors to determine an adequacy target for each district, including the number of teachers and paraprofessionals a district needs based on its enrollment and demographic factors. For example, for kindergarten through third grade classes, the statute says each district should receive funding for one full-time equivalent teacher for 15 low-income students and one for every 20 non-low-income students. For grades 4 through 12, the formula calls for one teacher for every 20 low-income students and one for every 25 non-low-income students. According to data from the state's 2025 report card, there were just over 1.8 million students enrolled in Illinois public schools during the 2024-25 school year. Of those, 49.7%, or 933,470, were classified as low income. The highest concentration of low-income students for any single district was in Carbon Cliff Barstow School District 36 in the Quad Cities region, which reported 100% of its students qualified as low-income. Lake Forest School District 67 in Lake County reported only 1.3% of its students were low-income. Although many observers say they do not expect the changes in eligibility rules to have an immediate impact on districts' official poverty rates, they do note that overall enrollment in Medicaid and SNAP has been declining in recent years for reasons they say cannot yet explain. According to data from the Illinois Department of Human Services, fewer than 1.7 million people in the state were receiving SNAP benefits in March 2026. That's down 13.7% from a year earlier and 17.8% from March 2023. Likewise, according to the Department of Health Care and Family Services, Medicaid enrollment in Illinois in fiscal year 2025 at 3.26 million was down 5.7% compared to the year before and 18% lower than it was in fiscal year 2023. "It's the right time for the state to explore other methodologies," Steens said, noting the declining enrollment rates don't comport with our lived experiences. Our next article from the front page: Trump likely to reject Iran peace deal. He says Tehran hasn't paid big enough price. President Donald Trump said that he had yet to review the exact wording of a new Iranian peace proposal, but he was unlikely to accept it because the Iranians had not yet paid a big enough price. Trump's remarks on social media concluded a day in which he publicly mused about the possibility of restarting airstrikes, the latest mixed signals as he seeks to end the war he launched more than 2 months ago. On Sunday, Israel ordered thousands of Lebanese to leave villages in southern Lebanon, an escalation of a war between Israel and Iran's Hezbollah allies that has run in parallel to the Iran war and could further complicate peace efforts. Iran has said talks with Washington cannot resume unless a ceasefire also holds in Lebanon, which Israel invaded in March to attack Hezbollah after the Iranian-backed Lebanese group fired across the border in support of Tehran. Lebanon and Israel agreed to separate truce last month, but fighting has continued, though on a smaller scale. The Israeli military issued an urgent warning Sunday to residents of 11 towns and villages in Lebanon's south, urging them to evacuate their homes and move at least 3,300 feet away in open areas. The military said it was conducting operations against Hezbollah following what it described as a violation of the ceasefire, warning that anyone near Hezbollah fighters or facilities could be at risk. The United States and Israel suspend their bombing campaign against Iran 4 weeks ago, but appear no closer to a deal to end a war that has caused the biggest disruption ever to global energy supplies, roiled global markets, and raised worries about the possibility of a wider global economic downturn. In his post on social media, Trump wrote, "I will soon be reviewing the plan that Iran has just sent us, but can't imagine that it would be acceptable in that they have not yet paid a big enough price for what they have done to humanity and the world over the last 47 years." On Saturday, a senior Iranian official said Iran's proposal would first open shipping in the Strait of Hormuz and end a U.S. blockade of Iran, while leaving talks on Iran's nuclear program for later. Though Trump said Friday he was not satisfied with the Iranian proposal, he said on Saturday he had yet to hear all the details. "They told me about the concept of the deal. They're going to give me the exact wording now," he said. Asked if he might restart strikes on Iran, Trump replied, "I don't want to say that. I mean, I can't tell that to a reporter. If they misbehave, if they do something bad, right now we'll see, but it's a probability that could happen." Iran's proposal to delay talks on nuclear issues until later appears to contradict Washington's repeated demand that Iran give up its stockpile of more than 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium as a condition to end the war. Washington says the uranium could be used to make a bomb. Iran says its nuclear program is peaceful, but it is willing to discuss curbs on it in return for the lifting of sanctions, as it expected in a 2015 deal that Trump abandoned. Reuters and other news organizations reported over the past week that Tehran was proposing to reopen the strait before nuclear issues were resolved. The senior Iranian official confirmed that this new timeline had now been spelled out in a formal proposal conveyed to the United States through mediators. While saying repeatedly he is in no hurry, Trump is under domestic pressure to break Iran's hold on the strait, which has choked off 20% of the world's oil and gas supplies and pushed up U.S. gasoline prices. Trump's Republican Party faces the risk of voter backlash over higher prices when the country votes in midterm congressional elections in November. Iranian media said Tehran's 14-point proposal included the withdrawal of U.S. forces from areas surrounding Iran, lifting the blockade, releasing Iran's frozen assets, payment of compensation, lifting sanctions, and ending the war on all fronts, including Lebanon, as well as a new control mechanism for the strait. Iran has been blocking nearly all shipping from the Gulf apart from its own for more than 2 months. Last month, the U.S. imposed its own blockade of ships from Iranian ports. Speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss confidential diplomacy, the senior Iranian official said Tehran believed its latest proposal to shelve nuclear talks for a later stage was a significant shift aimed at facilitating an agreement. Under this framework, negotiations over the more complicated nuclear issue have been moved to the final stage to create more conducive atmosphere, the official said. Our next article, rulings fail to curb Trump's media clash. White House pressure persists despite court setbacks. President Donald Trump has suffered a string of courtroom setbacks in his battles with the American media, but the rulings have done little but to blunt a broader campaign of pressure and retaliation that extends beyond the press. Courts have consistently sided with news organizations, rejecting Trump's defamation lawsuits and blocking efforts by his administration to limit press access or defund public media, citing the robust free speech protections guaranteed by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But slow-moving litigation and multi-layered appeals have worked in favor of an administration that acts quickly, tests legal boundaries, and shifts tactics after defeats. Trump's clash with ABC late-night host Jimmy Kimmel reflects a pressure campaign that extends beyond the courts. Even as judges affirm media protections, Trump demands firings and urges regulatory scrutiny, pressing companies outside formal legal channels. Trump can repeatedly lose individual court battles, but still advance his broader agenda of weakening and destabilizing the press, said Christina Koenigsohr, a professor at UC Law San Francisco, citing what she described as Trump's strategy of slow-walking litigation. A spokesman for Trump's personal lawyers said the president would continue to pursue accountability for what he calls false reporting and defamatory claims. Separately, a White House spokesperson described Trump as the most open and accessible U.S. president ever, saying his administration has broadened press access in unprecedented ways. Trump has filed at least 9 lawsuits against major media companies since 2020, seeking tens of billions of dollars in damages for what he alleges are false or misleading reports. Separately, his administration has acted to restrict press access to government agencies and threatened to use regulatory powers against critical outlets, drawing legal challenges by media outlets. Trump's latest setback came on April 13th when a judge threw out his $10 billion defamation lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal and its parent company, Dow Jones, over a story describing a birthday letter to disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein bearing Trump's signature. U.S. District Judge Darren Gales said the complaint fell nowhere close to plausibly alleging the journal knowingly published false information or recklessly discarded the truth. The actual malice standard that makes defamation claims by public figures difficult to win. Gales, nevertheless, has allowed Trump to file a revised complaint, meaning Dow Jones could still face a costly and time-consuming court battle defending what it says was accurate reporting. Trump's lawyers say they will file a revised suit. Should the case survive another bid for dismissal, the subsequent discovery, trial, and appeals could take years. Trump's 2022 lawsuit against CNN over its coverage of false claims of election rigging was tossed out in 2023. An appeals court upheld the ruling, but Trump could still seek Supreme Court review. The way our legal system works, it can cost a lot of time and money, and the president is able to take advantage of that, said Trey Lovell, a defamation law specialist. Our next article, U.S. Too Close, Gaza Mission. A U.S. military-run body near Gaza that critics say failed in its mission to monitor the Israel-Hamas ceasefire and boost amid flows to besiege Palestinians is set to be shut by the Trump administration, sources familiar with the matter told Reuters. The closing of the Civil Military Coordination Center in Israel would mark the latest blow to President Donald Trump's Gaza plan, already undermined by repeated Israeli attacks since the October truce and a refusal by Hamas to lay down its arms. Diplomats said the move, which has not been previously reported, underscores the difficulties facing U.S. efforts to oversee the truce and coordinate on aid as Israel seizes more Gaza territory and Hamas firms its grip in areas under its control. The move could add to unease among Washington's allies, whom Trump encouraged to deploy personnel to the CMCC and commit funds for his Gaza rebuilding plan, effectively on hold since the U.S. launched its joint war with Israel against Iran. According to sources, seven diplomats familiar with the CMCC operations, the U.S.-led body's aid and monitoring responsibilities would soon be handed to a U.S.-commanded international security mission that is meant to deploy to Gaza. U.S. officials privately described the move as an overhaul, but diplomats said the International Stabilization Force would, in effect, take over, ending the CMCC's role. A diplomat briefed on the U.S. plan said the number of U.S. troops working at the revamped ISF would drop from about 190 to 40. The U.S. would seek to replace those troops with civilian staff from other countries, the diplomats said. All of them spoke on condition of anonymity. Diplomats say the CMCC lacked authority to enforce the ceasefire or ensure aid, making it unclear whether folding it into the ISF would have much practical effort on the ground. The Board of Peace posted the statement on social media after the Reuters story was published, denying the CMCC is closing without addressing whether the ISF would take over its responsibility. Our next article, Justice Department sets sights on gender ideology. Three dozen Illinois school districts are the latest in a string of public schools, colleges, and universities across the country named as subjects of federal investigations into whether the institutions teach about sexual orientation and gender ideology and whether parents can opt out of such curriculum. The inquiry, announced Thursday by the U.S. Department of Justice, will also assess whether the 35 school districts around the state, plus Chicago's largest charter school network, allow transgender students to use single-sex bathrooms or participate in competitive sports. The DOJ's notice did not say what prompted the investigation or why the districts, which range from rural schools with extremely small enrollment to one of the largest districts in Illinois, and the agency did not respond to a request for clarification. More than half of the school districts are in the Chicago area, though the list does not include any of the large suburban school districts that have attracted attention in recent years for litigation over trans students' access to bathrooms and locker rooms. But Thursday's announcement did point to a June 2025 U.S. Supreme Court decision that requires school districts to allow opt-outs for LGBTQ-related lessons in the classroom, plus a more recent March ruling blocking the California policy that allowed schools to keep a student's gender transition private from their parents. This Department of Justice is determined to put an end to local school authorities keeping parents in the dark about how sexuality and gender ideology are being pushed in classrooms, Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dylan said in the news release. Dylan, who advised Trump's 2020 re-election campaign and rose to prominence as the face of several unsuccessful lawsuits against California's COVID-19 pandemic restrictions, is the administration's key lawyer on civil rights issues. As Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Dylan oversees the Title IX Special Investigations Team, a joint effort between the DOJ and U.S. Department of Education that was launched last year. Supreme Court precedent leaves no doubt. Parents have the fundamental right and primary authority to direct the care, upbringing, and education of their children, Dylan said. This includes exempting their children from ideological instruction that contradicts their values or decisions about their children's health and best interests. In a statement, Governor J.B. Pritzker dismissed the inquiry as the Trump administration continuing to punish states the president does not like, calling it a sham investigation. The Civil Rights Division used to investigate actual discrimination concerns to ensure all individuals are treated equally under the law. But they're now forced on belittling the rights and humanity of LGBTQ+ communities, he said. In 2019, Pritzker signed legislation requiring Illinois public schools' history curriculum to include a study of the roles and contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in the history of this country and this state, but Thursday's news release made no mention of the law. The DOJ's announcement is similar to more than a dozen from the Trump administration since the president began his second term last January, most citing Title IX, the sweeping 1972 federal law that prohibits sex discrimination in education. One of his first official acts back in power was signing an executive order dubbed Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports, which threatened to rescind all funds from educational programs that deprive women and girls of fair athletic opportunities. That included school lunch funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, as the state of Maine found out in early 2025 after a public spat between the president and Governor Janet Mills at the White House over an executive order. After the Department of Education launched an investigation into the state's education agency and subsequently froze the funding, a judge ordered the USDA to unfreeze the funds, and the agency settled the suit. In recent months, Trump's DOJ and Department of Education have launched investigations into K-12 school districts and state education authorities in New Hampshire, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Massachusetts, New York, Pennsylvania, Vermont, Washington, and Maine again. Inquiries announced last year in states like New York, Oregon, and Washington are ongoing, though the administration has claimed it found evidence of violation of Title IX in Kansas and Colorado school districts. The administration has also launched, and in some cases wrapped up, similar assessments of public universities and community colleges. And now the digest. Hantavirus. Three people died and one case of hantavirus was confirmed among passengers on a cruise vessel sailing the Atlantic Ocean. The World Health Organization said Sunday six people were affected in the incident, of whom three have died and one is in intensive care in South Africa, according to a social media post. Air travel. Spirit Airlines said Sunday it had almost completed refunding passengers and returning its crew to their home bases following its decision to cease operations over the weekend. The carrier had more than 4,000 domestic flights scheduled through May 15th, according to aviation analytics firm Cirium. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, May 4th, 2026. Please stay tuned.